Ma'aser Sheni, Perik Aleph, Mishneh Hey, 1-5. We continue to discuss what you can and cannot use your Ma'aser Sheni money for. And here really is where the limud from the pasuk, the actual exegesis from how to understand the words of the verse, are coming to play. Let me read you the words themselves. We're talking here in Parshas Re'eh, it's Perik Yod Dalet, pasuk Chaf Vav, 14:26 of Devarim. You'll apply the money that has the Kedushas Ma'aser Sheni to whatever your soul desires. That would be called a klal. It includes everything, whatever your soul desires. But then the pasuk continues, Babakar, Uvatzon, Uvayain, Uvashechar. On a list you could of things you may buy include cattle, sheep and goats, wine, and alcoholic beverages. That's called a prat. It's specific items. It's specific items, not a general thing. And then the verse continues on again, uvachol asher tishalcha nafshecha. Again, whatever your soul desires. So that's called a klal. It includes whatever you want. So this structure is called a klal, uprat, uklal. And there are certain rules that apply to it. I actually very much would like to explain how the klal, uprat, uklal works, as well as how the klal and prat works versus the prat and klal. And I'm going to save that to the end of the recording, because some people might not want to hear it, and it will take a bit of time to explain, but I think it's super important, and I really do want to explore it and explain it fully. But for now, just accept the fact, I'll explain more at the end of the recording, that klal pratu klal sets up a scenario where it's a general set of things that are permitted in the context here of what you may buy with Ma'aser Sheni, provided that they resemble the things in the list. So we have the things on our list essentially are they're animals and beverage. So Chazal understand that the common denominators between that list of items are things that draw their nourishment from the ground, because animals eat from the ground, as do, alcoholic beverage, etc., come from material that came from the ground, which was fermented. And also that it reproduces. Grapes reproduce, and that's the stuff you make wine with. Animals reproduce, they have babies, etc. So it's things like that that are what you may use to purchase with your Ma'aser Sheni money. The Mishnah adds a list, which the Rambam understands is essentially built into other similarities. We're talking here, of course, about food that you're consuming. And the Mishnah and the Rambam understands from the Pesukim himself, there are additional things that are points of similarity, namely that these things are detached from the ground, meaning as opposed to purchasing an apple tree, you only can purchase apples with your Ma'aser Sheni money. According to others, the reason for that would be that the apple tree is not considered food at all while it's still attached to the ground. And another condition is, as we'll see in the Mishnah, that whatever is being, whatever is being bought must be able to make it to Yerushalayim without going bad, meaning without spoiling. But on that point, it's a little more complicated. The actual halacha is that one is not permitted to purchase foodstuffs outside of Yerushalayim with his Ma'aser Sheni money. That's disallowed. One may not do that. But the Mishnah will consider what happens if one did do that. In the second part of the Mishnah, we'll consider if a person didn't follow the rules and he went now and took his Ma'aser Sheni money and he bought himself an apple or a granola bar or whatever it is that permitted? And what are the consequences? So here we go. The Mishnah inside says, Halokeach maim umelach. If a person purchases water or salt with his Ma'aser Sheni money, that's not going to work, as we'll see in a second, because those foods don't, water and salt do not draw their nourishment from the ground, they don't reproduce, therefore they're ineligible for purchase. And similarly, uperas mechubarim lekarka, if a person purchases foodstuffs that are still attached to the ground, like the whole tree, etc., or he purchases foodstuffs that simply won't make it to Yerushalayim. Like he buys some fresh grapes, and the trip to Yerushalayim is still three weeks from now, so then those grapes certainly will spoil and become inedible by the time he gets to Yerushalayim. In all those cases, lo kana maser, which literally means the maaser doesn't acquire it. So what we're saying here is that this is simply an invalid purchase. It's disallowed by the Torah, and that being the case, really, the purchaser has to get his money back, and he has to give back whatever he bought. So actually, it would be like a mekach tos. It's disallowed, meaning that the seller has to give the money back, and the purchaser has to give back what he bought, and they have to try again with legitimate funds. In the event, hypothetically, where the person who sold the bag of salt to this guy for my shiny money is gone, so we can't get back the coins in his hand because he's disappeared. So then the person who purchased the salt, let's say purchased it for 5 shekels, he'll need to take 5 shekels out of his own pocket and purchase new legitimate foodstuffs in Yerushalayim and eat them there as if they were Meister Sheni money and invest with the Kedusha. Nothing he can do. The coin that's in the hand of the salt merchant, wherever he is, actually still invests with Kedusha's Meister Sheni, which is a great shame, but you know, if you can't find them, you can't tell them, so that's what can you do? So that's what the Mishnah has to say. These are illegitimate purchases, and therefore they had to revert back, and the consequences, if you don't for whatever reason, are as I just explained. Okay. Now, that very line of the Mishnah said that you're not to buy produce which won't make it to Yerushalayim, which would imply that you could buy produce that will make it to Yerushalayim, but in fact that's not true. You're not allowed to, as I just said, you're not allowed to buy any foodstuffs outside of Yerushalayim. You want the money to go as cash into Yerushalayim and used for foodstuffs over there. But if you broke that rule, up to now the Mishnah said, well, if it won't make it to Yerushalayim, it's totally invalid. Now we're going to consider what happens if you purchase foodstuffs that will make it to Yerushalayim. So even there it depends. The Mishnah says, Halokeach peros, if a person did purchase some food outside of Yerushalayim with his Meister Sheni money, but now we're talking about food that will make it there. So he broke the rules, but it's not going to be necessarily totally invalidated because it could make it there and be consumed b'toras Meister Sheni. So there, we say, listen, shogeg, if it was an accident, then yachzuru dam l'mkoman, then the money goes back to its place. What does that mean? This guy he made a mistake. He had his Meister Sheni money in his left pocket, and he had his regular cash, private cash in his right pocket, and when he purchased his, you know, he purchased some the granola bar to take with him, he thought he was buying a granola bar for lunch now, and then he realized, oh, the money I gave for the granola bar purchase came from my Meister Sheni pocket. So that was a mistake. Now, granola bar will last till Yerushalayim, won't spoil, and that being the case, the first part of the Mishnah doesn't apply, meaning that it's not automatically invalidated by virtue of the fact that it's a granola bar as opposed to, you know, grapes that are 3 weeks away from Yerushalayim. But here, since it was a mistake altogether, that is to say, he didn't mean to use Meister Sheni funds to purchase this granola bar. He meant to use his regular chulin funds, and he made a mistake. So that being the case, still the Chazal here, the Mishnah, comes to that man's aid and says, Yachzrul dam koman. We say this was a mekach tos, the whole thing was one big mistake, and we force the merchant to give back the money, we force the guy to give back his granola bar, and they can start again from scratch. On the other hand, the mazid, if the fellow who purchased the granola bar knew full well he was buying it with Meister Sheni money outside of Yerushalayim, which is a no-no, so he's now done Isser Derabanan, so now we don't let him reverse the charges, we force him to take it to Yerushalayim, and it says, therefore, Ya'alu v'yechalu b'makom. Then he has no choice but, now after the fact, to take the food that he bought, which has Kedushas Meister Sheni, and take that food up to Yerushalayim and eat it over there. He can't, there's no way to redeem it again. He's stuck with it now and he has to schlep it to Yerushalayim. V'im ein mikdash. Now, what happens if, like, b'zman hazeh, there's no base of mikdash, so now he is stuck with his granola bar and he can never eat the granola bar because there's no base of mikdash, no mizbeach, etc. So then, your kavu, the only option he has is to wait for it to spoil and then to bury it. Okay, he can't get hana from it, he can't benefit from it, he can't redeem it, etc. He's stuck with his granola bar in perpetuity until at one point it stops being food, it's spoiled and rotten, and at that point it can just be buried. Kind of like if you're familiar with Shemitah and Eretz Yisrael, you have your peels and whatever it is that you put in the pot, your special refuse container for the foodstuffs until they spoil, and then you can dispose of them once they've spoiled. So the same kind of thing here too. In the case of a granola bar, that might be a very long time. Okay, so that's the end of the Mishnah, straightforward. Now I just want to revert back to the technicalities of how klal, prato, klal work. I think this is really important. If you're not clear, and you've eyes glazed over many a time in the past, this is your big chance to get it. It's not complicated. It's straightforward. Here's the deal. Famously, Rabbi Yishmael has 13 rules by which the Torah can be decoded. I wouldn't call these rules of logic. These are conventions. That is to say, there's nothing logically that demands these rules to be true, and that even includes Kol V'Chomer. But what we're saying here is that when Hashem wrote the Torah, he gave us a little decoder ring by which we could understand that there's more in the text than simply meets the eye. There are conventions by which you can pull out more halachas, and that essentially was, if I can say this, essential and necessary in as much as Hashem wanted to fit in an essentially infinite Torah into a finite text. So therefore, he needs to have conventions where stuff he pulled out, and he can encode further information than just what's written on the literal level. And one of the ways he did that, Hashem did that, is with these 13 exegetical rules, according to Rabbi Yishmael, which allows us to understand what the Torah is saying in more depth by pulling out principles. So two of the rules are what are called klal uprat and prat uklal. So klal means something inclusive, like kolel, and it means a general principle, and a prat means an individual thing, meaning a specific example, and that would be essentially the opposite of a klal. So sometimes the Torah lists out what's called a klal and a prat. First, it will say a general thing. It'll say, I'll use our very example, even though it's putting the two things together. But to keep it clear and not avoid too many complicated examples here. So first, in our pasuk here in Parshas Re'eh, it starts out by saying, kol asher ta'aveh nafshecha, whatever you want, that's what you can buy, whatever your soul desires. So that is whatever you want. That's a general. That's a klal. Then it goes on to say a prat. B'bakar v'tzon v'yayin v'sheichar. Those are specific things. So if the verse ended there, that would be a structure we looked at as a klal uprat. And the rule is, just as this is the convention, this is what Hashem told Moshe Har Sinai. When I do a klal then a prat, what I mean is, ein b'chlal elamash b'frat. The only thing I meant to include, says Hashem, in the general principle of, let's say hypothetically in this example, whatever your soul desires you can buy with the money, I meant not that. I didn't mean whatever. I meant specifically what is in the prat. Specifically just cows, goats, sheep, wine, and alcohol. And that's it. If it would just be that, klal prat, and there'd be no further klal afterwards in the pasuk would end there. That's how Rabbi Yishmael would learn the pasuk. It's simply klal prat. In b'chel and mash b'frat, when I said whatever you want, I meant just these four things on the list and nothing more. That's how klal prat works. And if you ask yourself, wait a second, if that's what klal prat's doing, so why in the world does the Torah use a klal prat? Let it just use a prat. Let the Torah just say, take the money that you were given with your Meister Sheni money, and you can buy cows, goats, sheep, wine, and alcohol. And I wouldn't need the klal, because it's explicit. This is what you may buy with it. The answer is that there are other rules that work in the Torah, like, for example, a kol v'chomer, or gezer shava, and so on, binyan av. So you might have thought, if the Torah, as the Torah often does, if it just gives you a list of specific items or one specific item, you would think, okay, those are either examples, but it can be extended further, or you know it can be extended because of some other kol v'chomer, gezer shava, some other rule that allows one to extend the Torah. So when you have a setup of a klal and prat, which tells you the only thing we meant in the klal is specifically what's in the prat, we mean and nothing else. So don't start applying kol v'chomers and gezer shavas to my klal or prat. No, no, no. If the Chumash had said just whatever your soul wants, and then it says cows, goats, sheep, wine, and alcohol, it would mean just that list of items and nothing more, even if it's illegitimate to apply a kol v'chomer or whatever to that. That's klal uprat. Then you have prat uklal. Sometimes the psukim are all the way around. First it lists something very specific, and then it sums it up, if you will, with a general. So that happens a number of times in the Torah, but I'll just stick to our verse here to make things less complicated. So let's say, for example, hypothetically, the Torah said, I'm reading what it doesn't say, but let's say hypothetically said, v'nasata hakesef, apply the money to b'bakar uvetzon uveyayin uveshechar, apply the money to cows, goats, sheep, wine, and alcohol, and then the pasuk continued on, uvechol asher teshalcha nafshecha, and whatever your soul desires. So first you'd have a prat, a specific item or list of items, in this case, cows, goats, sheep, wine, alcohol, and then it says, and whatever you want. So that is called a prat uklal, and that's a separate rule. On the list of 13, this is a separate rule of Rabbi Yishmael's list of 13, prat uklal, and the rule is when it comes to a prat and klal, we say actually everything is included in the klal. There are no exceptions. And that's the nature of a prat and klal. You might ask, if that's the case, so why in the world would it need to say a prat and a klal? It could just say the klal. It could just say whatever your soul desires, and then you would be, you know, without any, why would you think anything other than that it's a general principle? And the answer is the same way. You might think you could pull out some certain exceptions because of a gezeira shava, because of a kol v'chomer, etc. The answer is no exceptions at all. Prat uklal means everything is in the klal, and there are no exceptions. Okay, fine. Now, our actual verse is neither of those two things. It's not a prat and klal, and it's not a klal uprat. It's, if you will, both of them together. First, it has a klal, and then it has a prat, then it has a klal. So it's a klal uprat and prat uklal combined together. Now, klal uprat uklal, which is our pasuk, is actually not listed as one of the 13 things in Rabbi Yishmael's list, because kind of what it's doing is it's putting both those things together. It's combining the two principles of klal uprat and prat uklal. So in the case of our pasuk here, what's happening is first the Torah gives a klal uprat, whatever you want, and then a specific list. And that would suggest that the list is specific and not to be expanded upon. But then when it gives a klal again to extend it out to other things, so the understanding is that when you have a klal uprat uklal, we're saying the list is unbounded. The second klal applies, meaning it's a general list, but the generalities include only things that are similar to the specific items on the list. And that's what's happening over here. And therefore, Chazal left to tell us, what are the points of common, the common denominators between the things on our list, cows, goats, sheep, wine, alcohol, that we're saying you can buy whatever you want as long as they're kind of like these things. So Chazal say it's things that grow from the ground, the things that reproduce, which essentially makes for all foodstuffs, but not, for example, water or salt, as our Mishnah said, and also wouldn't necessarily include something like mushrooms or something like that. Okay, fine. So that's how klal prat uklal works, and that is what's going on in our Mishnah here. If you want to really do a little eon, you could see the Yerushalmi who understands this, not like Rabbi who applies this, not like Rabbi Yishmael does as a klal prat uklal, but as something entirely different, like Rabbi Kiva's ribun, miut, and ribui. But that we'll have to save for another time.